good. It's 10:59. There we go, 11. Okay, welcome to our Board of Equalization meeting. Today we have an agenda with 9 items that we can jump right into. First is to approve previous minutes.
Motion to approve the minutes is stated.
Second.
Should you go ahead and say 1 and 2? Yeah.
1 and 2, sorry.
Okay, we got a motion and a second to approve the minutes and agenda items number 1 and 2. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 3-0. Next is to approve the Board of Equalization Assessor Approved Review Process Report.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve item number 3. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
That passes 3-0. Okay, item number 4. To approve or deny a petition to hear property valuation after the filing deadline for the parcel in number 4. I do have some questions on this one. I know that the issue here is more about a timing question, but I did just want to ask into the substance a little bit. What is our sense for why the value increased so much?
That would probably, I'd probably have to defer to the assessor's office. See this parcel.
Rollback, you wouldn't normally expect a tripling in value from year to year. I mean, maybe the assessor's office hadn't.
And I'll let the assessor's office speak to that more directly, but in my experience with BOE, it can be not uncommon. The reasons for that I have found, I really should just let Berger closer address that, but I'll stop talking now.
Bert Garfield, assessor's office.
We don't really delve much into the reasons why a value increase so much while a person's applying for a late appeal. So if the value increases a lot, I don't know how that would bear into if you would grant a late appeal. But if you granted a late appeal, we could do more research. But it does happen. Some properties get improved. Some properties, we fix some data issues. So...
Yeah, I think you're right, and I looked to Paul for some guidance on there. I think that whether I should or not, I will admit that it does when you realize that there's going to be a significant hardship on someone, right? When there's a question of value and it's gone up 15% and they miss the deadline, it's kind of like, okay, just appeal next year. But when there is a dramatic change like this, it makes me look a little bit deeper into whether there was any county error or something interesting going on with our process.
Yeah.
Bert, if I could
go ahead,
since you're here, isn't it also correct that sometimes, especially in the cases of where we might have vacant land or other types of property, that they haven't been reassessed in a few years, that you can see sometimes larger increases like this in a single year?
Yeah, and here's the bigger question. Was it that it tripled in value incorrectly, or was it wrong in the past? Is it now just fixed? So,
right.
But we don't really do a deep dive into that until we get a late appeal requested, granted. So, it's a little premature to ask why the value increase until we get a formal appeal.
It is kind of interesting too, as I read down through this one. I feel the same way. It's kind of an interesting one to look at. The problem is that even as I read down through this, their own assessment was $1,000 an acre, approximately, up to $1,000 an acre with 160 acres. That's a lot more than 900 that was in 2018. So I don't know. I just know that on this one here, we're just looking at the late appeal status on it, not necessarily the value. So it's kind of an awkward one.
In this particular one, one of my questions was related to the fact that he stated that they had not received their notification, which typically arrives in July or August. Do we have any record that there was a change in address? Was there, because right. From what I could see in his petition, he never really just kind of said that
we didn't get it. Right.
Received the, you know, the bill, we're like, oh no. And so then we filed. And do we have any inclination as to why that was not received or?
We don't. I included in the body of the documents the notice history from this parcel. It shows until the owner made an address update on November 22nd of 19 last year that we were sending a notice to the same address since at least 2012. That shows the, of course, the notice. Now, mind you, the county's requirement under statute is to send the notice. We can't guarantee whether a notice is received, opened, or paid attention to. The most common reason for people filing late, one of the first statements is, I never got the notice. I don't know why people either don't get the notice, either through some error of the mailing, or they just don't pay attention to it until the bill comes. They disregard the valuation notice thinking, oh, nothing's changed, I don't need to look at that. Or it gets put in some pile somewhere because it's somewhat nondescript, I don't know. But what we can go off of is our records. Our records show that we have sent the notice every July and October to the same address since 2012. So that's what our records show.
Okay. Paul, do you have a recommendation on this?
My recommendation would be to deny because records show that notice was mailed. There was no claim of extraordinary circumstance. I don't see any other factual basis to grant the request. It tripled in. This is an appeal based on value, and it's too late to make an appeal based on value.
Okay. Any additional questions?
Mm-mm.
Entertain a motion.
I would move to deny the application as stated in regular agenda item number five.
Number four.
Oh, excuse me, four.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second to deny the application in regular agenda item number four. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. That passes 3-0. Okay, item number five and six with the American Heritage Schools.
Vicki Westergaard, Clerk Auditor's Office. This goes along with that packet that I attached to the agenda item on American Heritage Schools, so that you can see, and I gave them a copy, and you can see the lots and everything that we're talking about previously. This is Chase Hale from American Heritage Schools to answer any questions, and I think Anthony has some things he wanted to talk about.
Thank you, Vicki. This is Anthony LeBay with the County Attorney's Office. I sent a packet out via email. I think Paul forwarded that on yesterday, just talking a little bit about the background, because during the last meeting, there was questions about maybe some inconsistencies or how were certain parcels treated for exemption status. So we wanted to provide some information for some of the background. As Paul mentioned, I think when two other vacant parcels were granted the exemption, it wasn't clear what the educational related purpose was for those exemptions. Having said that, that doesn't necessarily mean that should not have been granted. I don't think there was an opportunity for them to really kind of argue their case, right, to prove that. In regards to these parcels, the standard is that we have to, one, make sure that they're a 501c3 nonprofit, which qualified, they submit proof to that, that their property is used exclusively for educational purposes, and then we have to identify what the educational purpose is. So in this case, with the current application as before the board, we would need to make sure that there's a finding made that it's for being used for an educational purpose, and then what that educational purpose is. If the board has any questions about that. One other thing is that with those other parcels of land, If the board determines that there may be some inconsistencies, we could always look at that as well when they file their continuing application to see whether or not things need to be changed, right? Or they can then submit additional information of why those parcels meet that criteria. So, any questions from the board at this time?
Okay. I don't have any questions. We had a pretty thorough discussion on this one in our last meeting. And, I think I continue to find non-compliance with the technical requirements here. And while I'm sympathetic to, you know, potential inconsistencies in the past, I think that really what American Heritage is trying to say is that there is an overall campus expansion plan, and that's part of an educational use. And what gives me some feel better about this is I think there is a clear path for American Heritage to, if the parcels were combined, then they all fall under one application. They're all automatically exclusively used for educational or charitable purposes. And so I think that's the path that probably makes most sense. But right now, if they're held separately, I don't see how it complies with our requirements for tax exempt status.
We have no interest in maintaining them. Sorry, Chase Hale, American Heritage School. We have no interest in maintaining those parcels as separate, distinct units. If that is a procedure that this body would like us to go through or require us to go through, we would certainly comply with that. We did come prepared with some additional information to share with this group that we feel was responsive to some of those questions that were raised in the past. I think the packet that Vicki put together, thank you, by the way, covered much of that. But I would submit just one additional thing on top of some of the things that this body has already considered, and that is that there are some very unique attributes to our business model that I think are worthy of consideration here. We, unlike many organizations, we are free of debt. We do not go and get loans to leverage expansion. Rather, we rely exclusively upon fundraising to pay for our land outright and our building outright. And so in a very real sense, we do use vacant land, even portions of land that has maybe had some temporary improvements on it. You'll notice if you look at a Google search today, you'll notice some temporary parking lots that we've put out there on some of these parcels in question. But even portions that still remain unused, we would suggest that we are, in fact, actively using those in a long-term progression of fundraising. The fact that we have land, for example, allows us to make a case for support when it comes to getting fundraising for buildings. In the packet that Vicki put together, you see on the very last page, I think it's the last page, there is a... yes, right here. There's a screenshot that she cropped off of our website that shows our master plan. Number 9 and 10 are currently in use. Numbers 11 and 12 on that graphic, we will be breaking ground on those pieces in April. We have all funding for that in the bank, and we will be proceeding forward to that. And the fact that we own the ground under 13, 14, 15, 17, 16, 7, and 8 allows us to also have more mature conversations with potential donors. The land is actually the hardest piece of this. If we're thinking in terms of earnestness, acquiring land is the hardest piece when it comes to fulfilling a vision. Once the land is there, people are much more excited about providing science rooms. So we are using much of this right now, again, for parking or for fire engine turnarounds on various parts of this campus. But admittedly, there is still space that is just covered with weeds and will remain covered with weeds until we do, in fact, get that funding that we need to build what we're wanting to build. But we are using that land, again, in a sense. It's not a physical productive use, but it is a use in a, again, in the sense that we're we're able to have a more mature conversation with the donor. So I don't know if that's helpful or if this body still would require us to, again, do the aggregation of the parcel. But if that's necessary, we would do that.
So let me push on that a little bit, because I'm almost, I hear what you're saying. I think it's persuasive. I mean, clearly this is just part of your school and the intentions. Mm-hmm. I think one of the challenges I have with that is you take some of the larger tax-exempt entities and landowners in this county. Mm-hmm. And if you apply that same standard, you have Brigham Young University that theoretically could just buy homes, right? Or another nonprofit organization could have, and a well-endowed organization could just start purchasing assets. Right mm-hmm. now, those would not be tax-exempt unless and until they're starting to break ground, they're starting to construct and actively place them within the campus or mm-hmm. within the charitable use, not just a long-term possibility.
Yeah.
And so that's the challenge, is while I hear what you're saying and I'm very close to being persuaded by that, because you know, you are a smaller organization and you are purchasing directly adjacent to your campus. I think that's why that standard is important, is just a long-term speculative purchase of land, or just to put it in there to park it while you're waiting for your campus to develop, just does not comply with the requirements under the law.
Yeah, and that's a very fair point. I acknowledge the relevance of what you're saying and the appropriateness of it. Perhaps I could just offer two points in response. First, I'll just repeat again what I said before. This is precisely why I offered up what I feel is a unique distinction between us and some of those other organizations, and that is that we do not incur any debt. And so because of that process that we follow, you know, if you look at our tuition, for example, and you compare our tuition rates to that of comparable private schools in northern Utah, you'll find that we're anywhere from a half to a third the rate. The reason for that is because of our business model, our operating model that we've had for decades now, of relying exclusively on donor funding, not tuition funding, for land acquisition, campus expansion, other major capital projects. And I think that is a unique attribute between us and many other organizations. Many other organizations would pursue growth quickly. But for us, we do it slowly, we do it carefully, and we do it in a way that allows us to keep our tuition very low, free of debt service. And in that sense, again, this does come back to this question, how do we define use exactly? Because that's the hinge here. And I guess what I'm suggesting to this body is that we in a very real sense, are using those parcels of land. They, again, get us to a much more mature point in the process that we follow and in the conversations that we have with the donors that we rely upon. And what we're doing in April is evidence of that process in action. That's the first point. The second point, and I do have this here, I do have some information here in this packet that we brought, if the commission would like to see it. But there was also a question, I think this is point number five. We're talking about five and six kind of together. I believe point number five is specific to a parcel where we currently have a home on it, if I remember the ID numbers correctly. So there was a question, I believe it was with respect to that piece of property in particular, where this question that you repeated again came up, you know, could American Heritage just be acquiring that for speculative purposes, sitting on it, and then spinning it off later for a profit? First, we have no instances of our history of ever buying and selling real estate. We've only purchased in our 50-year history, unless we've moved locations, which we did at one point. We moved from a Pleasant Grove location to our current location in American Fork. But from that time to the present, we've never sold. We've only bought, we've only expanded, and we've never deviated from that vision. With regards to that home, I have here in my packet an appraisal, a drive-by appraisal that we commissioned before we acquired it. That drive-by appraisal shows one valuation. We then paid $15,000 above that price. just to, again, get us that much closer to closing the deal. Paying $15,000 above a drive-by valuation on a home that was built in the 60s that has not been kept up and actually at present is probably condemnable because of asbestos. You know, it's not a good business move if we were just focused on potentially spinning that. I would offer that up to this group as yet another piece of evidence of our earnestness to pursue our vision and to realize the totality of this master plan. I've been working at the school also for about 5.5 years. When I first came, we had a student body of about 700. Today we're at about 900. We've steadily grown by about 40 students per year. Our master plan envisions that continued rate of growth, and we have every intent to see it through.
So can I ask you a few questions?
Yes.
And five is the number five on our agenda is the 0222, which has the home on it. So I'm just so you know,
yeah,
which one I'm referring to. Mm-hmm. And then the other parcels in six, they're little slivers, and then there's that big lot to the side. Of right there by the golf court, I mean the tennis courts down mm-hmm. below.
Yes.
So on the home one, on just on a technical basis, talking about the law and the requirements on a technical basis, that one, it doesn't have, it's pretty fenced off in the sense that it doesn't have any parking lots or it doesn't have any road access or anything to it. Mm-hmm. It sits kind of by itself. And so on just technical grounds in the way of exclusive use, it's troublesome. I'll just put it that way. The others, though, the other two, the other ones that we're talking about, the 0347 and the 0003, there's one that's a little sliver, and it's above the gym, just that mm-hmm. little sliver up there, which has been used exclusively for parking, overflow parking, I mean,
yeah,
for the facility.
I believe you're correct. Our slag lot probably covers that piece.
Right.
It looks like it does.
And then the one below the tennis courts as well, you actually have a road that dead ends into that piece of property that can be used and has been probably used for overflow as well in the way of parking as well exclusively.
We do have a tennis court that is south of the, and actually can I approach the
sure.
the bar, the bench? I'll just share this with you here real quick. One, two, three, so Commissioner Lee, I believe you're asking about what we have on page one is, you know, we've got that designated as with a B.
Right.
And if you turn to the third page, you see a zoomed in version of that. This is all just from Google Earth screenshots that we took this morning. So we do have that tennis court parking lot there on the northern side of this. And then that little hammerhead outlet there was required by code because it's not a through street. And we have to be able to have a fire truck do a three-point turn. And so that's extending down right there.
Yes.
So that's what you're referring to.
That's what I'm talking about. I mean, the other one up on here on A, and the only reason why I bring these up is because in some cases, you know, I've seen parking up there personally. I've seen people park in these areas. And so... Mm-hmm. Which is, again, use for the school and for its purposes. I go back to the one with the home, though. That one's a little harder because it's off. It's not necessarily, you know, I hear your arguments, your mm-hmm. arguments on the debt and so forth with that, but I think according to the law, I'm going to have a harder time saying that one's been exclusively in use. Where the others, I have seen it, and I see the construction of such a way that it allows for just what we're talking about in the way of use, which is exclusively for this use of the patrons to come.
Yeah.
And so I see that on those two, but I don't on that
yeah.
on that other one.
Yeah. And I'll concede those points readily. Yes, we are productively, physically utilizing those other two parcels, we are not productively physically utilizing the home.
Right.
And so it does boil down to a judgment call of what the definition of use is. And I've laid out this, right, this whole point about our approach, our what I think is a unique approach to fundraising and campus expansion. And on that basis, we're using it, but that may not be enough to meet this group's definition of use.
For me, I think if you've got a couple empty fields that we're periodically using for parking or overflows or something, we can probably get there. It's pretty finice, right? But I think we can get there. The home one is really troubling for me. And it's not, I want you to fully understand, it's not that I doubt your full intention to utilize that. Mm-hmm. It's, I realize that a donor could go away, funding could stop, economies could change, and the school could be forced into selling that, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's been, you know, a tax-free entity that you benefit from. And it was never used for the intended purpose, right? Even though
that was your hope. Fair point.
And so that's more, I don't question your motives at all. I worry about the unpredictability of the future in granting that particular status. I think for me personally, the cleanest way to really handle this, to just make it easy, is if we combine those parcels. Because then it's really easy to just say it's part of this parcel, it's part of the greater use, and then it's a real easy yes, and we can go. And so my question would be, could we, Paul, make a motion today granting some tax-exempt status contingent upon the parcels combination? Or would that need to, would we need to maybe postpone today's action until those parcels are combined and then we could grant it? Is there a legal mechanism to handle the issue today, recognizing that I personally would be happy to vote for a yes today if under the condition that these are becoming combined parcels? Is that a viable option, or do we, otherwise for me, I could simply say yes to the two vacant lots today and a no on the home. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. But my preference would be to just handle it today, and because I fully recognize and appreciate what the school's doing and their efforts, you know, to educate. And I think they should have that status. But we've got these nuances of law that are always tricky to navigate.
Yeah, I know. I understand what you're saying. But unfortunately, I don't think there's not really a mechanism to do that, because you have to analyze the use as of January 1.
January 1? Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, I think to the extent that you can provide information about how you look at it, how you would plan to look at it in 2021, right now we're looking at January 1st, 2020. How was it being used?
Okay.
And so it's too late to combine for that time period.
For that time frame. And that's fair. I understand that. And so for me, I can certainly, I can, you know, again, it's, I hope you recognize where
I'm
trying to go where, as far as I truly feel comfortable. And on the two vacant pieces, you can sell me on that you're using those for overflow parking and that they're contributing to the overall educational efforts of the school. On the house one, I'm just a little more reluctant on that one, because I just don't see a connection there. And you've even admitted that at the moment, it's not really being utilized that way. So for me, I could get on with the two, but with the house, I can't.
Commissioner Ainge, if I could just make a quick little point. I just wanted to hesitate maybe of counseling too much about combining the parcels, because I know sometimes the assessor's office does proportionate the exemption to a portion of one parcel. And I hesitate that if we, you know, the board councils combine them and then the assessor's office might come back and say, actually, we're only think you should grant it now for this new parcel only 80% exemption. That might be a concern. So, I mean, it could be an option. I just want to make sure that, you know, we don't.
I think that's fair. The counsel that we received, however, I mean, I appreciate that. Right? You need to see, but the actual action of, because that's the thing, is I also have zero doubts about the intent or the earnestness here, but that's not the question of law. The question is are there active steps being taken? And once it's one parcel, then you don't have to ask that question.
You're actively
about the entire parcel.
Right, you're actively going.
But you do, you know, fair. I think the point you're raising is that you still have to look at the entire parcel and see what percentage is being used. It's not like you could have a strip mall over there or something else.
So we do have like some in the continuing application that we only exempt a portion of it. So a part of it, of that one parcel, will be taxed. The other part would be exempt. So that was just my concern, was that, you know, and it might be that it combines, there's no problem, right?
Yeah.
But then my recommendation might come back and say, let's not exempt the entire parcel. Let's only exempt the portion that's used for parking.
And so, and I concur with that. It's a very valid point. But for me, it's where I'm coming from. It strengthens your argument that this is being used as overflow parking because it's all part of, it's connected directly to your parking lot for your tennis courts, right, with this hammerhead accessing mm-hmm. it. So I can pull right down there into it. It's all part of the same piece. So for me, that argument becomes even more convincing. So we're moving from thin ice today that I can kind of say yes on to a much stronger position from the school standpoint for me.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, if I could clarify something that Anthony brought up about that, just so you're aware on the applications, when we are, and specifically on the continuing statement where this comes up frequently, the question we're asking for in those cases is how much of the parcel is being used for tax-exempt purposes and how much of the parcel is being used for taxable purposes. Typically what we're looking for is if there's a combination of tax-exempt and for-profit activities going on a parcel. A good example of that is a church up in American Fork owns an entire building, but they lease out the front portion of the building to for-profit businesses. So in that case, we grant a percent taxable, which means a portion of that building is being taxed as a for-profit. That's usually the standard we're looking at, and that's kind of the intent of the question on the application. But Anthony is correct that the assessor's office in their review could recommend that if a parcel is not being fully used for an exempt purpose, could recommend that we do a percent taxable.
But if there was no taxable activities on the parcel, you would see it as extremely unlikely.
Mm-hmm. Well, basically any tax exempt organization would probably report back that if the applications intone that intent, meaning this, we're saying, are you using any of your tax exempt parcel for profit use? This happens frequently with IHC. This happens frequently with other IHC is a great example because they have multiple parcels where they're doing both tax exempt and taxable. And for-profit activities on the same piece of ground. So from a process standpoint, that's what the applications are kind of intend.
Okay, thank you. I would entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we deny number 5 on our regular agenda and that we approve number 6 on our agenda.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve, deny number 5 and approve number 6. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 3-0. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, can I make a disclaimer statement?
Yes.
That I think the Board of Equalization realizes that the school probably has multiple priorities. You know, becoming tax exempt is one and providing education, developing is another. To the extent that, you know, combining all of these parcels into one, we don't have any comment or any authority about how the city would view that as far as future development goes and putting more buildings on the same parcel and things of that nature. So just to be clear, we aren't making any comment that that's not going to conflict with other priorities you might have, if that makes sense.
Thanks for covering us, Paul.
Yeah.
Okay.
Get that in a minute, Sally. It's important.
Thank okay. you. Okay, regular agenda item number 7, the Rachel Covey Foundation.
Okay, so number 7, last year when they were approved, because the was on Greenbelt also,
yep.
So you made a ruling that they had to meet Greenbelt and the tax-exempt status, and that for every year they were on, they met the Greenbelt and the tax exempt, 1 year of the rollback would come off. Mm-hmm. And I sent the attorneys copies of the minutes for when that was said for a year. And so the first one is for Mr. Covey to come and explain how they're still meeting the Greenbelt.
So just so I understand procedurally, normally any tax exempt status, they would just be in this catch-all continuing in number 9.
Right.
But because we put an additional restriction on this foundation that they also have to demonstrate Greenbelt status, that's why they have their own agenda item.
Right.
Okay. So we have no questions about the continuing charitable use.
Right. Right.
They're here to talk about
Greenbelt.
Are they still under an agricultural use? Okay.
Hi, Michael Sean Covey, the executive director of the Rachel Covey Foundation, or DBA is Bridle Up Hope. You may know us that way. Yes, our operation hasn't changed. We still utilize all of the parcels for our charitable equestrian program for young ladies, with pastures and 19 horses on the property, and trail rides and horse facilities, and it's just a ranch. So happy to answer any questions.
I don't have any additional questions.
I don't either. Maybe I do have one. On the Greenbelt status, I know that there is a home there, a ranch there house or whatever that is. And so everything still is according to square footage. I'm just looking for clarification on Greenbelt that we're, because we've ran into these in the past. We're still good there. I will just assume that we are, but...
What's the question, exactly?
Usually you have a certain percentage, you know, when you have a home on a piece of property like that, mm-hmm. We've run into this in the past, where you have to have a certain percentage of the Greenbelt acreage that's there in, you know, how we had to carve that one out and do that measurement.
How many total acres do you have there?
So it is about, let's see, there are five parcels that are all together. In total,
I thought it was way more than.
Is it way more? When I saw the picture, I just
saw. It's 128 acres.
Okay. It's the mountain. I just saw the picture. Yeah. And the picture just had that one arena area.
So. And I think that you might clarify that, I mean, this is not, it's not anyone's primary residence.
It's
a facility.
Exactly.
That houses those who participate in the program, and then maybe some employees of the program.
Exactly. Yeah. So nobody stays overnight at the ranch, employees or participants. It's an after school program. There's a small barn house on the property that prior to us moving to this location, that home was a residential property used by some renters. But since we've had the property, no one has lived there. We use it as office space for our program.
No problem. Thank you.
So thank you.
So you also don't have a full-time caretaker who lives at the property then?
We have full-time caretakers who don't live there,
okay.
But they work at the ranch every day.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Great. Thank you.
So
like thank you.
Okay.
And then,
thank you all.
I mean, since you're already up here, I think that the next question on the next item is just, is there any difference? Because I think that it's the same issue is you, if I understand, you're bringing a new parcel and you're trying to also make that tax exempt, but that's exactly. Part of the ranch.
It's part of the ranch. It's the south fence line that we literally forgot to include last year because it's 0.01 acres. I didn't even know it existed.
It's on Greenbelt also.
And it's also on Greenbelt. And so we would, if we were to approve it, I think we would do it. Probably it makes the most sense to do it on the same arrangement that we did before, mm-hmm. where you continue on both.
Now, if you have a change, you better make sure and get an application in on Greenbelt, a new one, right? Don't they have to, aren't they required when there's a change in the
in ownership or added to it? Well, normally they do, but this is interesting because they're not on Greenbelt anymore. They're exempt.
I think that's one of the reasons why we're doing this. Okay, so they don't run into that issue, right?
Okay.
So now they're tax exempt, but the rollback would apply.
I just did not want an issue to happen where there was a change and all of a sudden the application had come in and then there was a denial.
So they're voluntarily leaving Greenbelt.
Yeah.
Going to exempt, but.
That's right.
But there's still a 5-year rollback that the exempt is going to sort of cover as long as they qualify.
Yeah.
Purpose for Greenbelt, I guess.
As long as we keep
a whole new standard here.
The ranch and the horse program going, we're going to.
All right.
Because otherwise, it'd be a really great strategy to avoid the rollback.
Well, yeah.
For anybody.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
So going forward, we just need to continue to apply for the continued exemption each year, right?
For the next 4 years?
The next 4 years.
But part of that is you're going to be able to have to confirm that you're still operating the ranch
as we have been. Yes.
Right.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay. So thank you all.
Thank you.
And from a process standpoint, it'd be helpful also as you file your continuing statement every year, if you provide any kind of evidence to show the activities from the ranch of the year. Typically, we changed our continuing statement this year to ask for additional information. The purpose of that would be any kind of annual report sure. that you would give to like a volunteer board that would show pictures and the activities of the ranch.
Got it.
And anything, and obviously any of those, any of that documentation that also confirms the continued use of the ranch in an active production agricultural situation to keep it in greenbelt status would be sure. very helpful.
Sure. Okay.
Well, they had a lot of documentation. They had all that in there.
We had data and testimonials.
Right,
and
exactly. So
we'll continue to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have a question. Since the properties that were approved last year, this is year one of the 5 years that they have to keep it in greenbelt. With this new application, by the time the first one's done, they'll have one more year
mm-hmm.
that they have to show that.
Mm-hmm.
So are we doing it that way? Or are we having them be the same?
I would say no. I mean, we're talking about a little sliver is all
right.
It is.
So
why don't we just have it all together?
It will be the same time as
I would just
other
say
one.
The same time instead okay. of having this little sliver at the end.
And I think that she just wanted to make sure that that was clear on yeah. the record. That okay. That's what the understanding of the board is, so that okay. can't be an issue.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. And do we need to, in our motion, Paul, what direction do you have for us? Because 8 we would just approve, but 9, do we need to
9
make a condition?
Approve with conditions.
Well, 7 and 8, right? So,
oh, so 7 and 8.
You would probably just approve. And then 8, you would probably just say that you want to, for
apply the same
purposes,
conditions?
Combine it in with the other parcels
okay.
that are in 7.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank I'll you. Entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we approve number 7 as stated on our regular agenda.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve number 7. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 3-0.
And then I'll make a motion that we approve number 8 on our regular agenda with a notation that this parcel will be included with the surrounding parcels for the purposes of reporting.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve item number 8 with the condition stated. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. That passes 3-0. Item number 9.
This year we made changes instead of giving you one big giant book
thank
with
you.
All the continued statements that we've done in the past. We'll be given to you in several batches. And so these are the ones that came in as of last Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you noticed, but as Bert said, we are requesting more information on the charitable organizations, and I tried to put those all together so you could see what they were providing for us this year. I looked through them. There are no questions on any of them. Nothing had changed on them. I don't know if you have any questions on anything.
And that deadline is March 1st?
Right. We'll be no late.
There will be no accepting after March 1st.
Okay. The letter we sent out told them if they didn't provide the documentation by March 1st, they would be revoked.
Okay.
And just so you're aware, the format I've asked Vicki to follow is a similar format to the recommendation letters that you see on commission agenda that are given to you by the attorney's office. We felt that would be hopefully a little bit easier way to deal with this mass of information materials we deal with every year. So if this works and you like it, we'll keep it. If you hate it, we'll change it.
Okay. Looks great so far.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. I'll move that we approve regular agenda item number 9.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve item number 9. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 3-0. Final motion.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned.